Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
And it's a very simple question, right? Are Model C and private schools reluctant to transform and hire black teachers? Now, you might be a parent, you might be a pupil at the Model C school that you're at, a private school that you're at in Gauteng, wherever you might be. And do yourself a favor, just do that audit. How many black teachers are there in your school? And I was joking with the producers and I was saying, yeah, the Zulu teachers are black, for example. And Marva was saying, no, at his school, even the Zulu teacher was white at some stage. So it's a reality. And, you know, with racism around and the institutional culture and racism, the integration that has been meant to be taken place in our society, we're in 2018 and we're still talking about identity, politics and assimilation and how black learners are being treated, for example, how the black teachers are being treated by their white teacher counterparts in private schools. And the ratios are completely uneven. And even black teachers are getting sidelined. I mean, these are real, real discussions that we need to have in 2018. And it's sad that we're having these discussions in 2018, but these things are actually happening in our schools right now. So to discuss this topic in this next hour, we welcome Dr. Sithembile Mbete, who's a political analyst and lecturer, to the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing? You're too bright and early for December.
Oh, of course I'm bright and early. It's December.
Are you having a good December so far? Lewis Mantata, who's a PhD candidate at WITS and an educator. Welcome to you, Lewis.
Thank you, sir.
Good to have you with us. And dressed, and he's no stranger to the show, is in his Liverpool shirt, is Sizwe Mpofu Walsh, who's author, what's a DPIL candidate?
That's right.
Department, what is it? What is DPIL?
It's like a PhD, but in Oxford speak.
Oh, okay, cool. At the University of Oxford, Cesar and Popo Walsh has got far too many degrees, for my liking, considering that I don't have any. If you can give us your introduction to the topic at hand and where we are as a country and the topics that I've touched on and, you know, how black learners are being treated, how black teachers are being treated in specifically Model C and private schools, give us your 30-second synopsis before we start, going deeper into this conversation. Should we start with you, Dr. Sithembile Mbete?
Sure. So this conversation is something that's quite close to my heart at the moment because I am an extra Rodine girl, which CBS likes to make fun of. And in last weekend's Sunday papers was a big story about how Rodine had fired basically one of its black teachers, Tidi Mukhuderi, and then reinstated her only when there was a big media spat about it. Mm. And I had spoken at Rodine about 2 years ago, gave a talk to the girls, invited actually by the students in the wake of what had happened at Pretoria Girls High around hair issues, and basically said that in a school, you know, which is over 50% black, Indian and colored, it was a real indictment on the school that the teachers were still majority white. I mean, the teachers were 90% white, even though the student body had changed. And what was happening was that the young women who are at the school, who are incredibly intelligent, Rodine's a very, very academically rigorous school, very politically awake and woke, both black and white, were then constantly coming up against the cultural conservatism of their teachers. And that's just not a sustainable position to be in. And you need the school's institutional culture to adapt and to evolve with the reality of South Africa in 2018.
Okay, Sizwe, what's your take on the topic?
Well,
that's something you're very passionate about.
It seems like, absolutely. It seems like every few months a new school rises to prominence in the public debate. And this is symptomatic of a much deeper morass, a much deeper crisis across South Africa's elite schools. And the problem is, all too often, our education system is put in public spotlight because of the crisis in the public education system. And there is a serious crisis there. But I think one of the things we fail to recognize is that the alternative, the independent school system, which is in fact often far more expensive, also has its own social crises. And so we're often putting students in this difficult bind. Either you go to a school that has better academic standards, but then you have to assimilate, deny parts of yourself, and only realize 5 years later what craziness you've been through, or you have to face a public education system which is crumbling. And I think that's a serious indictment on our society 25 years into democracy. And often these independent and especially elite independent schools get away with a lot because they operate in these shadows and they hide behind a very misguided notion of academic excellence.
Lewis?
We continue to recycle these old white men who are headmasters and that sort of thing in schools, and they haven't changed. The institutional culture has remained the same. The student body might have changed, but the culture of the school has remained the same. And it's these old white men who are continue to be recycled by schools, who move from one school to the next with the same ideas. I have a problem with that.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that.
Why are we having this conversation in 2018?
We're having this conversation, like Susan said, we're having this conversation because our government has failed.
Exactly. I mean it's bizarre that we're still having this conversation in 2018.
Our government has failed, and I think our institutions, a lot of them, are hiding behind this neo-whiteness that Professor Hlonipho Mokoena refers to, this neo-post-colonial, post-apartheid whiteness of trying to retain whiteness, especially Model C schools. A lot of them in Johannesburg, a lot of them in Pretoria, a lot of them in the Western Cape. They're government schools relying on government funding, but they're exclusively white.
Is it perhaps a case why are there not more black teachers? Is it a racist thing, or is it an elitist thing in these colleges? I mean, you're a former St. John's boy, right? We were talking earlier with the producers, and you know, like even like some black parents was one of the things that one of the producers said, prefer to have a white teacher as opposed to a black teacher. Is that mindset? Because I just think that's a nonsense notion in 2018.
I don't think so, and quite frankly, I don't know why. But what I do know is that there's absolutely no excuse for the lack of transformation in these schools. And all these excuses that are spun by these schools, quite frankly, just don't stand up to scrutiny. And we're in such a crisis in many of these schools that it's not even a question of recruiting new black teachers. These schools are jumping through hoops to reappoint teachers who have actually resigned. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. Black teachers move on, and immediately white men who have actually resigned come back to fill their places. It's as if they're straining. I mean, one doesn't want to be sort of conspiratorial, but the actions of these schools and the failure to transform the staff body goes far beyond just the structural problems in our society. There's almost evidence of a concerted effort to prevent transformation from happening. And, you know, in universities, we always get the story about, well, there are no black physicists and there are no black mathematicians, which is also a nonsense. But, I mean, are you telling me there are no black teachers in South Africa that can teach at these schools?
100%. So we're talking about the topic, and it's a fascinating topic. Model C, private schools reluctant to transform and hire black teachers. What's your take on it? Do you have kids at these schools? Are you a headmaster? Are you a white teacher at one of these schools? We'd love to hear from you on 8830702 in Johannesburg, 021-446-0567. Of course, you can send us a WhatsApp on 072-702-1702. We would love to hear your views. It's a very, very important topic to discuss. Is it perhaps a solution to say to these schools that you have to have X quota of teachers, black teachers, white teachers, whatever the case may be. If you can do it in companies and organizations, why can we not do the same thing at schools? Or is that not a feasible thing to do?
Well, I think that it should be a feasible thing to do, because these schools, as much as they are private and independent schools, are still operating within the context of South Africa, are now guided and should be governed overall by the South African Constitution.
Yes.
And one of the important pillars of the South African Constitution is redress for the past. And one of the things that I found really horrific in conversations with girls who are at my former school currently is how much seems to have regressed. I think the point that was being made about this neo-whiteness is that, you know, when I was at private schools 16 years ago, in the 90s and in the early 2000s, there was some goodwill, it seemed, to at least be trying to have the pretense, if that's what it was, of creating an environment that was accommodating, and that was conducive to the education of the young black girls. And that goodwill seems to have gone away. And in the case then where the goodwill has gone away, then you will have to legislate, you will have to have policy in place that then forces these schools to operate as if they are operating in South Africa in 2018. And I think that, you know, we are beyond now the point where when I started primary school in 1991, when the country was burning and township schools were not functioning, it was, you know, and people said, well, you should be grateful you are privileged to be going to a functioning private school. That was a good, you know, that was a relevant point to make. But you cannot say to a 7-year old in 2018, you should be grateful that you are going to one of these private schools, and more grateful than the white children that you go to school with, when your parents are paying exactly the same fees and when you are in a majority black country. And so the thing is that these schools, if they are going to need to be forced to adjust and to change their culture by force, then that is what's going to need to happen, because they operate within a context. And I think what's happened, as Sizwe has pointed out, that because of the failures in the public school system, the private and independent schools, particularly the elite ones, have been given a free pass, really, to operate as if they don't operate within the context of South Africa.
Lewis Mantata, you were a teacher at St. John's for 10 years, right?
Okay.
Tell us about your lived experience, and also I'd like to hear your opinion on the last two calls to saying that black parents of the kids should be driving the process even harder. But what was your lived experience as a black teacher at St. John's?
Look, I had a wonderful time at St. John's. I need to point that out.
Yes.
But the truth of the situation is that a young teacher coming out of Limpopo or coming out of rural Eastern Cape, getting a job at a school like Selborne or which any of those schools, It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult for him to fit in, to assimilate into the culture. He needs to have the accent. He needs to have the, you know, the bro culture. And half the time, our people out of the townships don't have that. It then becomes a culture shock for him to perform. He's judged by the parents. He's judged by the staff room. He's judged by the boys or the girls themselves. So it's a complete mess. And you'll hear headmaster saying, we've advertised the post, but nobody is responding. None of the people are responding to the post. None of the people of color are responding to the post. It's because the culture is not welcoming to a different person. It's not welcoming to any person who's not fitting into the Anglo-Saxon culture. And that's what we need to change. Rituals, symbols, cultures of schools to accommodate a different person.
So you're saying it's more about culture, that we haven't had this change, than anything else?
Yeah, it's about culture, because the bearers of that culture are the very teachers, are the very white men who were shooting kids in the townships, if I may say so, in the 1980s, who are now headmasters, who are now deputy headmasters. That's where the problem lies.
Sizwe, you're nodding your head there, and you've been scribbling lots of notes on your iPad.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to remember that a lot of this boils down to the political will of the schools in question. There are always these excuses given about the structural factors in our society and how transformation is impossible. How come these schools can get the resources for elaborate pyrotechnical displays, but they can't get black teachers? How come these schools can teach Latin, to a university level, but they can't get a Xhosa teacher? How come these schools can engage in incredible book fairs, but they can't get the cultures that exist around them to actually be affirmed? How come these schools have khaki uniforms for their Afrikaans students, just so that they can feel okay in their uniforms, but no uniform for any other culture in South Africa? So resources and effort is easy sometimes, but in other times, suddenly it becomes impossible. This is a political question. The people at the top of these schools refuse to change. They feel comfortable. And until they are pressurized enough by our society and put in the light, they're going to continue to hold on to the privileges that they are hoarding.
Power that they are hoarding. Not privilege, power. Although I do really appreciate his resources become easy sometimes. Not when it comes to hiring Negroes or Kaffirs, because this was South Africa, but resources become easy sometimes. Context of White Supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy, what racism, white supremacy is, and how it works. Today's date, Friday, December 21, 2018. So I have been told. The solstice, as I also have been told. Lots happening. Pagan rituals run amok. Lots going on. We are still here. Racism, white supremacy being the primary thing happening in the known universe among people. We are here for workplace racism. I know it is the holiday season, but I am sure a lot of non-white people worldwide are still having to work. So if we have any folks, hey, I don't have any problems. You avoided the office party, or you went, you hung out for 20 minutes, shook a few hands, stayed sober the whole time. You got out without being sexually fondled, without being accused of raping anyone, stealing anything. You were visibly seen, so there's evidence that you did actually attend the event, and you left unscathed. We definitely would like a report. Always love getting updates to how to deal with office parties. That's such a great counter-racist skill and can be a great opportunity to practice counter-racism code. But if we have any of those folks, and or you figured out how to get your promotion, how to get your raise, how to get your vacation time. Matter of fact, if you're off, you're not going back to work until 2019. How did you do that without any problems from the whites on your job? We would like to know. You should be first to dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have problems, difficulties, you don't want to go to the office party, didn't want to go to the office party, trying to figure out how to avoid it and or any of the other problems that non-white people, particularly black people, experience in the workplace, dial in. We'll do our best to offer constructive counter-racist views to help solve problems without creating new problems. Very important point. And I'll ask, do folks have a code if somebody should call you a nigger on the job or say nigger period to you? Do you have a code? This is what I'm going to do. Just asking to make sure, because it does seem like a lot of victims of white supremacy, even victims who are familiar with, you know, maybe the fundamentals somewhat of counter-racism, still have a problem maintaining our composure at times. I've heard that from a few listeners recently. So do folks have a code? Just picking that as an illustration, that's a popular one. That's one we should all be, you know, prepared for a white person to call us a nigger on a job or anywhere else, or just to say the word in our presence. That should not be, you know, I mean, that's like, I was going to say 101, but I mean, that's like kindergarten counter-racism. I mean, really, I am not going to be out here chimping out just because you said nigger. If you have a code on that you use on the job, please share. quickly, that clip that we heard at the beginning from South African talk radio, SABC, I believe. No, it's 702. Sorry, got confused with the TV station over there. 702 Talk Radio, South Africa. We were just last week, we had the black male caller in Connecticut talking about how he didn't even know any black males who had passed the Praxis teaching exam in Connecticut. And he was asking for suggestions on things that he might do to help pass the exam. You know, he's got time constraints and that sort of thing. Or white people, they might say, oh, we're going to boot you out of the program. And I played that segment because it's the same thing in South Africa. Now, they didn't say anything about, oh, well, you know, the Kaffirs, they just can't pass the exam. But it was a lot of the similar reports of mistreatment, abuse that the black male caller was talking about, where it's the same types of excuses. We just can't find qualified applicants in Africa, no less. On the continent, we just can't find niggers that are capable. Really? Out of all the niggers here, you can't find any? Really? Same excuse worldwide, and it really is not an excuse. I think they said in the segment the failure of the South African government. It's not the failure. The only government that we have on the planet is the system of white supremacy, and it's doing exactly what it is designed to do. South Africa, here, anywhere else. Negroes are not supposed to be educators, period. And we will do all kinds of things to see that that happens. Doesn't matter if you have a million Negroes and, you know, five schools to pick from. So we got plenty of niggers to pick from, Kaffirs, to pick from to get it. It doesn't have anything to do with it. Niggers are not going to be teachers, educators in the system of white supremacy. And that's that. And they just put that plan in motion worldwide every day. Now, back to the caller from last week who wanted suggestions on the teacher exam. As I said, we do have educators who listen to the program. One of them wrote in, he said, I was listening to the compensatory call in and heard your question about the teacher exams. I'm not sure what the exams are like in the gentleman's area, Connecticut, but I do know that there are plenty of tricks that those test makers use. They like to put multiple answers that would be correct to a question. This fools people that only look for one answer or don't read everything through. My advice would be to read everything and fill in the most accurate answer. There are also exam prep material that might be beneficial. They review vocabulary terms and exam questions. He should look for those as it was helpful for me. Also, if he has a relationship with any professors, I would ask them as well. They usually have access to study material and resources that can be helpful. I don't remember if we inquired about professors being willing to help, but I do remember the general sense of it being a hostile environment, there not being many black males, and the threat of being ejected from the program. So it seemed like it might not have been the most welcoming environment. Other folks who dialed in or wrote in, sorry. Oh, email address. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. If you are not able to dial in for the program, no spectator. And we are on a so-called holiday, so folks should have extra time and energy. If you got a little time away from the plantation, no excuse to be a spectator. You can think, assess this 2018 year, to talk about the year in review. You can review your workplace performance this past year. What did you learn? What sticks out? What do you want to work on for 2019? Improving, refining your workplace counter-racism code. That is a great thing to share. But untiljustice@gmail.com if you need the email. Next person wrote in, black female. I've been listening to the cows for the past year. I've not got the nerve to call in during workplace racism, but I listen intensely and have learned a great deal from you and the callers. I'm a black social worker in Maryland, Chesapeake. I have worked for a large medical facility in Baltimore, Henrietta Lacks, for the past 12 years as a manager in behavioral health outpatient clinic. My boss told me she is reorganizing another program in the division, and she thought I would be the perfect person to head that team. She said that you can tell me I am crazy to get out of your office. At the time, I thought to myself that I was not interested in stating in starting over with a new team. However, after some careful consideration, I decided to apply and will be transferring there at the beginning of the year. Part of the reorganization was that two white women managers have been made assistant managers, and I will be the manager supervising both of them. As I prepare to move there, I have been going to meetings and being introduced to the staff and taking tours of the building. On one such meeting, the assistant manager started showing me around, and we went to her office, and it was bright and airy with nice furniture, and I thought, okay, this might not be so bad after all. Then she took me to where my office was going to be, and I was speechless. It was dark and dank. They dug up furniture from the basement that was not suitable for me. I just looked around and said, love it, love it. I'm applauding specifically. That frequently is way more effective than anything you could say, any words, any, She continues. She looked at me and said, yeah, I know. It's not much. I'll stop here. I haven't been codified on my current job, but I'm looking forward to participating, developing my code on my new plantation. We will look forward to hearing. Yeah, that'll be an interesting contrast. Perhaps you can share if you write in. What's the difference, you performing in a codified manner as opposed to when you were not codified previously? What's the difference? How do people treat you? Problems? Do you have any problems? Because that's been suggested, right? Some people saying being codified on the job has caused them problems. So is it making things more difficult for you practicing counter-racism codification on the job? Or is it best to just go and willy-nilly have fun, go out to lunch with all the whites, crack jokes at everything? Is it better? No notes. Don't take any notes about anything. Say anything. Don't read the policy and procedure. Is that the best way to deal with things? With the furniture, that is a fantastic response. That might even be one to make a written request. If it's really what has been described, if you want an upgrade to see if there is more suitable furniture, and that's one that you can even be in the question lane. I was, shown the facilities, and there seemed to be such a stark contrast in the resources that were made available to the assistants, particularly if I'm the manager. How do I have the shabbiest, office setup of anyone here if I'm the manager? Still in the question lane. And I also thought it was accurate. Really appreciate it. She had my office in quotes. I have commented regularly about the possessive adjective in the workplace. My job, my office, my desk, my computer. It is all their property. The job, the office, all of that can be taken back, repossessed when they see fit. And we should, all of us who've worked more than 60 days should know that. So anywho, the next person wrote in, B in Toronto, talking about massive obstructions against the context of white supremacy. Haven't even been able to log into Black Talk Radio the last 24 hours to upload the audio from yesterday's book study on the man nut, or to even get everything to make sure everything was straight for today's broadcast. The man nut is uploaded from yesterday at SoundCloud, and I posted the link, Facebook, Twitter, all of that. But many callers have reported having difficulties, curious difficulties, being able to dial in, be in Toronto being one. So she wrote in, she said, I've been searching for ways to supplement my income as hours of work have reduced significantly. I sent out resumes and have been going on interviews in attempts to secure additional employment. Today's interview really had me thinking about how diabolical white power is and the role of white women, two in a row, to report I have observe that all 10 interviews that I have attended thus far have been conducted by white women. Wow. So to me, it gives evidence that white women are not experiencing lack of employment in any regard. Me too. At the interview today, I was interrogated by three white women. I am in social services field that assist so-called marginalized sectors, NGRAs. It is interesting that rarely the question is asked of who marginalized them. I digress. One of the white female interrogators asked me the question, how would you incorporate the anti-oppression framework that our organization upholds? Gus, I wanted to burst out laughing. Right at that moment, I kept my composure. That is rule number one of counter-racism. Good job. The question in my mind while answering their question was, how is it that these three white women are asking me about the anti-oppression framework and there is no non-white male female on their interview panel? Before, I would not have thought about it, misinterpreting the panel set up as the norm in an interview. When logic was used, I realized how diabolical this experience is. White women have created an surveillance, employment, social work, and education. There are others, but using these three for now. With the use of logic, I began to realize how white women in those fields have been instrumental in banning non-white black males from employment. Of how white women have kept non-white black women in entry-level paying jobs in those fields. How white women in the fields of employment, social work, and education actively maintain the very poverty that continues to deprive black life from living a life within the system of white supremacy. Whenever I hear a white woman talk about gender inequality, I will now tune them out. I realize more of how white women continue white terrorism every day. Be in Toronto. We talked about white women yesterday. Dr. Curry, the man knot. He talked about the agency of white women and how their role in white supremacy historically and currently is minimized. Those are three great illustrations, but I mean, wow, 10 out of 10 white women in Toronto. We're not talking about in some backwoods area where things could be a little off, but in big city Toronto, one of the, you know, major cities in the Western Hemisphere, like, wow. I can only say, again, do not view white women as marginalized, weak, anything but diabolical, conniving, powerful enforcers in the system of white supremacy. That is the correct way to view them. If folks have a response, if you were pitched that question in an interview by three white women, the question, how would you incorporate the anti-oppression framework that our organization upholds? How would you answer that question? And we'll assume just for today's for response that the anti-racist framework is, you know, the standard white rhetoric around these issues. So something like, you know, no mistreating Negroes. White privilege is, you know, a real thing. It exists. And, you know, we're trying to do away with that. And our goal is to help the marginalized, racialized others. And, that's, you know, what their framework is. So how would you incorporate the anti-oppression framework that our organization upholds? Anyone thoughts on how they would answer such a question in an interview by three white women? Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in, if you have comments on what has been shared thus far, if you have your own situation that you would like to share, again, we always love folks who have figured out codes, things that can be helpful in the workplace. I will make sure to underline that anybody, you figured out some things that work well to solve problems, minimize conflict, make sure you get that raise, promotion, or keep you. They try to write you up for something and you figured out, oh, if you do this, this, and this, bam, that can stop, you know, them from getting a write up and kind of back them up off of you a little bit. That is always something we need to hear. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to share. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Can you hear me?
Greetings. Hello? Greetings, Jay in St. Louis. Yes, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to call in and share some things that have been happening to me at the plantation I work at. But first I want to answer some of the questions that were posed. Hearing the N-word on the job, I hear it regularly. I give no response to it. I'm never called the N-word, but it's used rather casually, I would say, by a white man who is proud of his German heritage, always makes that known. And then the question about, what was the question again about how would I, if I were in an interview, how would I work against, within a racist frame, within a framework working against racism or something to that effect, right?
Let's see, it's how would you incorporate the anti-oppression framework that our organization upholds?
Oh, that's a tough question. I know, I don't think I would be honest with them, though. I can say that for sure. Whatever I would say back, I wouldn't dignify them with an honest answer. I can confirm that much. But the particular incident I wanted to share today was, it actually happened today, this morning. I go in and I'm sitting at the desk that I've been assigned, and, a customer walks in the door. We kind of like customer service, person to person kind of job. So, he walks in and he addresses the only other white person in the office. It's just me and this other white man. And this a white man walks in, and he's talking to my white coworker, and he's like, "What's up, man? Keeping it real in the hood." And like he starts to pump his chest with his hand and like throw up the peace sign, and he never made eye contact with me, but I just kept wondering, like, is that, you know, is he trying to anger me? I didn't respond at all, but, and then even on his way out, he was like, "Happy Kwanzaa." It was just really weird, and I was wondering if you, what you thought about that. You know, was this an instance of him trying to practice racism? Because I think it was, but I just wanted to contribute that to workplace racism.
Wow. When, as you were sharing that, much obliged, Jay in St. Louis, kudos for the non-response, both when, I guess, your German colleague is running around and nigger this, nigger that, great, and bragging about his German heritage. Dr. Welsing, I'm sure, would have a big smile, the grandcestor. And then the non-response for all of that. I guess this was his send-off. I don't know if you all have the weekend and then Monday and Tuesday and all that. So if you all aren't going to see each other again until Wednesday, I guess he really wanted to show out since it's going to be almost a week since you all, until you all rub elbows again. In my view, it's a flagrant flagrant act of racism, white supremacy. I was that's another illustration. You know, you can chalk that up, you know, 10,000,000, 5,000,002 or example of white people not being ignorant about racism, any aspect of it. The first part of it, you know, what's up, dog? You know, we taught us so many examples of that over the years on workplace racism of white people doing this sort of thing, white men and white women, where they don't do that to anybody else. There's tons of white people on the job, white people that they're friends with, white people that they hang out with and lick on their dogs and, you know, babysit their children and everything. They don't do that with them, but they got a rapport. They wait for the niggers. They wait for the colored staff. And then they come in, it's time to, you know, do some monkey shine and coon a little bit and blah, blah, blah. All, total act of racism. The Kwanzaa at the end, he had to put the cherry on top of it. It reminded me, I think, Chantel, she's dialed in many times over the years for workplace racism. She said, same type of thing. White guy on the job was there and he was doing the same thing. It was she and other non-white people were just there talking about work, courteous dialogue. He wasn't even involved. And he started doing that, making tacky references to like stereotypical things associated with black people. And I think he ended it with, Bye, Felicia. This was when Straight Outta Compton had just come out, and that's in the movie, kind of alluding to Friday and all that. But that he kept saying it like out loud, trying to be disruptive. That sort of tacky. When Mustafa, it does not get any better than tacky. That's the best that you can expect in terms of an attempt to, I'm not going to be racist. This is what I'll come in for the jolly holiday season, Kwanzaa, and you know what's up? I'll give you my, you know, rap imitation, my blackface, if you will. No response needed at all. I think that's no response needed. Deliberate act of racism. I'd probably put that in my workplace journal for the day, his display, and leave it at that. Nothing more need to be said. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have your own situation, if you have comments on what has been shared thus far, feel free. Again, we should have lots of folks who have lots of energy, since lots of us have time away from the plantation. So no excuse for spectators this here evening.
Have you heard?
Thomas in New York. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers. Mike Foley, I'm sure. Yeah, let me say, if I had a coworker using the word nigger, I think I would definitely get that on tape. You definitely see exactly how that would play out with human resources or whatever, because I don't see how they could keep that person at that job. I have a chance. You have a problem. Anything can happen, but... you know, also, the same thing happened to me at this new, like I said, the company moved. We're in a much larger space. My work is doubled, doing the same job, but it's two everything I used to have one of, or something I used to have two of, four of. You know, it's, everything is doubled, but I sit right by the exit on one side of the office. I'm the first... they allocated me to this desk right here. And every time this racist suspect, she's an Italian, white woman. She's leaving the office. She says goodbye to this person, goodbye. To hear her as she's making her exit. And as she passes me, she says, peace out. And I'm like, okay. It happened once, it happened twice, and now it happens every day. So I said, all right, I can pretty much get the hint. So I never respond to it. An incident happened yesterday at work. One thing that's been pissing me off, this new location, is I keep getting sent to the old location to get stuff, and, you know, it's becoming a hassle. So either way, gentlemen, who was the head of the IT department, asked me to meet him at the old building. there's some boxes that need to go to off-site storage, and once those boxes are moved, that'll be the end of everything at that building, at that location. So, you know, she got there, Tom, you know, he told me to be there. And when I get there, and it was a hassle to get up there because you're no longer the tenant. Once I get to the floor, it's totally gutted out. So I'm like, what boxes is he talking about? So then I'm like, where is he? So after about 15 minutes, I call the receptionist at the building that I work at. And she answers the phone, and I tell her what's going on. And she says, oh, well, he's outside. I said, what is he doing outside? So I said, well, connect me to him. So she somehow connects me to him. And his plan was for me to bring these boxes down to him while he sits in the car. That wasn't how it was conveyed to me yesterday when he spoke to me, the day before when he spoke to me. He said, we were going to do this, but now it's me. So when I go, I said, well, where are they? So I'm thinking maybe it's just a few boxes. It's 30-something boxes. So I said, bro, there's no way in the world I'm carrying 30-something boxes. I can only carry two at a time. That means I have to make 15 trips down, at least 15 trips down from the 42nd floor on a freight elevator that takes like 15 minutes to come because you can't leave with boxes to the front. I need a car so we can make this job easier, and I need help. So he says, oh, well, you know, I wasn't planning on going up there. So I said, all right, no problem. Well, listen, I'm going to go to the other office and get a car. So he says, he found it this month. So he tells me to go to the terrorist desk and get a box and bring that back with the cart because that also has to go with us and now save him a trip from going there. So I'm like, man, you know. So I go and I go to the lady's desk. So I'm pissed off. So she could tell I'm pissed off, you know, because I wanted her to ask me what's going on. So she asked me what was going on. So I explained to her what happened. And she said, he's an idiot. She picks up the phone. What is wrong with you? You don't tell Thomas what to do. Only I tell him what to do. How dare you call him to come there? We could have had this situated. I'm sending two more people with him to help him. You don't do that to him. I was like, wow. So I'm a personal slave, you know. On top of that, in the new place where all the mail and stuff is set up, I set it up a certain way to make things pretty easy for myself and whoever else would come in there because a lot of people do their own mailing. And either way, she didn't like the way it was set up, so she had another person go in behind me and remove everything. And then the very next day, the mail didn't come. So I said, you know, the mail didn't get delivered today. I don't know what you want, you know, to, how you want to handle it, but it hasn't been delivered. So she says, no problem, go speak to this other lady. So I go speak to the other lady. So the other lady's like, well, I don't know what to do. I mean, if it hasn't been delivered, you got to go back to speak to her. So I go back to speak to her. So she calls the other lady up, and she dismisses me. So they have a conversation I wasn't privy to. So today I get to work. I see her. She says, whatever happened with the mail yesterday? So I said, you know, the mail didn't come. You remember? So she says, yes. But did you go speak to the other lady? So I said, yeah, you called her up. No, did you speak to her today? I went. You're in charge of the mill now, so you better get over there and speak to her. So I said, wow, now I'm in charge of the mill. But when I set up, you know, it's just how they work days. They don't want to do what they want to do. I got a few more, but I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you, Gus.
You're in charge of the mail now. Wow. Okay. Moving up. That's
I moved
one.
Up the flash.
He is. That's one I would be mindful of when you're on a job and a white person just says that all of a sudden you're in charge of, wait a minute now, am I in charge? Like, is this a new assignment? Like, is this a new duty? And what does that mean? The implication, like, that's one I would want to slow the conversation down maybe and ask a question or two when they start throwing out you're in charge of insert blank. Anyway, the right on cue, peace out, that sort of thing. It does not get any better than tacky. And he said that's a French white woman, again, global system of white supremacy, worldwide, same behaviors. The white woman fussing at the white man who's going to have you do all the moving of these, you know, 50,000 boxes or whatever. That is staple in the system of white supremacy. White are one racist getting mad at another racist about how the Negros are going to be. Oh, okay. Another non-white. Well, that's the second. That's the second time. This is the second time that she has verbally accosted a non-white employee who was trying to boss her Negro around. Wasn't it an Asian female that when this is in this whole move situation who was doing such and such? And she, yeah, she love it. Now, white people will do what I said, fuss with other white people about how the Negroes are going to be used. But another non-white person? Oh, yeah. Please. I'm definitely not going to have another Negro or even, you know, non-white, non-black person. That's not that far from the Negroes messing up what's happening here and telling my Negroes do this and do that and confusing things. Like, absolutely not. Like, get everyone fired. Classic. And again, the white woman theme for the day. I'm so happy. That's something I've been stressing for 10 years, not minimizing the role that white women play in the workplace. Extremely important. The men, it seems like they do a lot of that too. The triangulating when things that you clearly are not in charge of, or it's not even Thomas, it is him personally in this situation, but in general, things that we are not in charge of. White people know we are in charge of very little on the plantation, where somehow it'll be us, where you're in charge of this. You're responsible for that. You should have been the one to go like, wait a minute. I did what I was. I do what I'm told. I am not an executive. I don't have an office. None of that. I do what I'm told. I am given orders around here. Now, all of a sudden, I'm being talked to as though I'm the CEO. They are classic for doing that sort of thing. Talked about that with, never mind, I was going to mention Doug Williams and the Redskin thing, but talk about that down the road. Much obliged, Thomas in New York. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, if you have your own situation that you want to share, if you have some things that have worked out well, codification that you want to share, or if you have problems, feel free. If you have comments, questions on what's been shared thus far, or if you want to respond to any of the questions that have been asked, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everybody else on the line. First and foremost, I'll say kudos to Thomas for not considering that comment as being a compliment. White people are very coy at the things that they say. And a lot of times, we're just so glad for them to say anything to us, we don't consider the detail of their comments. In most cases, they're not meant to be compliments. Yes, to the male caller who was giving his report, he was right and on point for not responding to the quote unquote black cultural dissertations that white people would copy in order to get a reaction from non-white black people. The logic behind it is that by the non-white person ignoring, just going about whatever they're supposed to be doing or what they want to do if they got a break on the job and whatnot and just kind of dismiss it and not give it any attention, it will go away. Because the white person who, in my experience, is very conscious of what they're doing, is no accident at all, or you know, I stumbled over some word I may have heard, they consciously practice that type of behavior in the workplace, because it's the most common place where white people have contact with their non-white victims. So when they utter things of that nature out of their mouths, they are expecting a reaction. Unfortunately, for the most part, they do get one. But in your case, sir, I am confident that by doing that, that person would eventually stop over time because of your codified actions. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for right now. I'll continue listening.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Underline the last portion of what he just shared. Generally, that's been my response, not just in the workplace, but in general. When racists, when they are trying to provoke you with saying nigger, saying racist jokes, peace out, whatever it is, whatever the little tacky verbal comments and things, and you don't respond at all, you don't even have to give them the you don't have to say a word, nothing, they generally will stop. That takes a whole lot of the fun out of just what retired firefighter just said. A lot of times confused victims, myself included, formerly, would respond and jump up and down, and you know, that's exactly what they want, have you wasting your time and energy and getting upset and responding. When you don't do any of that, you do not give them any time and energy. I keep emphasizing that time and energy, how we invest our time and energy. And I'm all about efficiency of words. Like when you speak on the job, using as few words as possible. Like in that situation, if you are going to say something, whoo, better be in the question lane. And it should be an efficient question. That's what Mr. What to be done with a nigger. That's a great one. Whoo. Great one. And just wait, and then pull your pen. And what's even better, ask that one, but you pull your pen and pad out first, so you get your phone out so you can write your note. What's to be done with the nigger? And then wait for them to answer. Beautiful. You can do that with the CEO in the room. Other folks who have, if they've already called, if nigger has already been said, or they've called you a nigger, oh yeah, I would pull that one, that question, regardless of whom was present. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have comments, questions, suggestions, if you want to respond to any of the questions that have been asked, proceed. While folks are spectating or getting themselves together, again, if things are that spectacular in the workplace that you do not have any issues, problems, invest in the cows, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal is in the top right corner, PayPal button, that is. If you are not into PayPal, drop an email and we will get you a physical mailing address. And again, to remind folks, this is not a broadcast for spectators. I find it hard to believe that you could have even if it was just two of us, three of us, I find it hard to believe that you could have a collection of non-white people. And yes, no one has a report or even observations of things that are happening in the workplace. I find that hard to believe, but continuing. And the office party report, I forgot that one. If folks have had to participate in any of that, I know some listeners did say that they, you know, that is a part of being on the plantation. You might have to at least make an appearance for a little while. Yes, sir, Thomas in New York. Just if anybody did have to participate in that madness and, you know, you refined your code, please share. Thomas in New York.
Absolutely. I wanted to first say that I've broken code 7 times this week. I hit my breaking point with the terrorists, and I started giving a lot of pushback from You know, and today was the first day I said, all right, I'm going to stop doing that. But I just felt like she pushed me to that limit. Either way, the Christmas party was happening at work during work hours, so there was no way to avoid it. By the way, I was so busy setting up and preparing it, I didn't get to enjoy a bit of it. So the one thing I did get was a few lamb chops. I was able to slide off on my plate and scoot out of there and go hide in the back. I thought I was setting stuff up. And, you know, that was pretty much how I worked it. And they played the game called White Elephant. The name alone is why I would never play that game. But either way, they were very loud, drunk. I was so angry because usually when you have a Christmas party, you hire people to set things up. These people didn't do that. They had me go to the supermarket and get 34 12 packs of beer. No, 12, six, you know, with the bottles, the 12-ounce bottles of beer, different imported brands, go get 22 bags of ice. I mean, I felt like a total slave that day. I mean, it was everyone from every direction, you know, Thomas, it was, no, I need you to help me move this table. Thomas, I mean, it was just, you know, total chaos, you know. So the one good thing that happened was they did slap me with a $250 envelope, which I wasn't expecting. So I was like, great. And someone else handed me a $100 gift card. So, you know, those were the perks of it. But nonetheless, I felt like, you know, the way they organized it was totally wrong. You know, I mean, it was everything was just on my shoulders. I know it's not Saturday, so I can say that. Also, the black receptionist, the way the new office is set up, she really can't leave her receptionist desk because she has to buzz people in. It's not the other offices. When the elevator opened up, you were right there. But this one has glass doors and security system, totally different, brand new, not a brand new building, but compared to the old place, you know, very modern way buildings normally work that I've worked at. The old building was just like being like an old building. But this one, definitely an upgrade, and she can't leave the desk. So now I'm her personal, according to my terrorist, I have to, you know, cater to her so she doesn't have to leave the desk. So she'll buzz me to get ice. Buzz me to get a cup of ice and water, like stuff like that. I mean, this is in my job. Like, you're calling me from way over here to do simple tasks for people. It pushed me to my breaking point this week. So I think I kind of let everyone know how I felt. The other thing is they hooked up this Alexa at the freight elevator entrance. The way the building's set up is the freight elevator's way over here. I got to keep getting up to get the door. So I complained about that. And they installed an Alexa on this receptionist desk. So now that thing starts talking and stuff. So it's just like total chaos, Gus. Total chaos. And I told the receptionist, you're training your replacement if you don't know.
Wow. Where to even begin? That's one thing that I can say, my experience with the Christmas parties, talking about time and energy. That was the black male or non-white male on the clip in South Africa. And they were talking about at the schools, how resources can become available for fireworks and all kinds of other nonsense. But we don't have the resources or the will to hire black teachers. The same thing, all kinds of resources become available for the Christmas party. We got, you know, bounty, alcohol, lamb chops, you name it, we got it to do it up for the Christmas party. And even got, you know, enough to throw around here, splash, you know, 250 around. Thomas, right on, great year, you served us well, here's gift card, right on, get as much as you can. But that is, they have ample And then these will be the same people that come around. Oh, man, I'm hurting. Oh, struggling. It's been so difficult. Just don't know how we're going to get by. And then they wasted all that on the Christmas party. That is racist. In terms of, I've heard that, what you said about just you kind of reached your breaking point this week with how much stress that you had to be under. I heard that from a number of victims this very week, and that is a part of the system, especially this time. I think I asked last week about if there were black people that were, you know, being abused or especially hostile treatment at work because of the holidays. It's the time to really go hard on black people in a variety of ways. But I think that is just standard for this time of year. It's stressful anyway. I think a lot of whites, they're working us extra hours and doing lots of things. And I was saying to, off the air, I was saying to black people who were having this very same, reporting the exact same thing. They reached their breaking point. They didn't have the same amount of patience on the job, and it impacted, you know, how they practiced their codification, or maybe being less codified because they weren't as patient. They were a little more irritated. We're all human, happens to the best of us. And it's the solstice. Solstice season changes is big too. That has an impact on a lot of us too. When all of that happens, it is really important, I think, to recognize that. When I know I'm not patient, when I know I'm irritated, that has a big impact on who I am around. Now, obviously, on the job, you don't have as much control over who you are around. But, oh, man, that would big time change my behavior if that means I have to consciously take more bathroom breaks. That's what that means. If I just have to tell people up front that, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, having a bladder infection, or, you know, so I'm a doctor, I got a new medication, I got to go to the bathroom a lot more. He told me to drink, you know, a lot more water and got to go to the bathroom. But that's what I would be doing. I'd be going to the bathroom or whatever I could do. I'd pretend I was with the smokers for a day, whatever I could do, if that meant getting more solitude time to just take some breaths, drink some water. Drinking water lowers your blood pressure. Just doing things to try to calm myself, because I know I'm going to be irritated. And that, in fact, that can be a danger zone. When you hit that, I'm kind of at the breaking point. I don't have as much patience. And one of these folks says something to me, it could even be a non-white person, says something to me, and I'm a little more irritable. I might be a little more likely to snap back at them or to say, like, let them know how I feel. In my view, frequently, that is not the best policy. Racists, generally, it's not going to improve things for you to let them know how you feel, generally speaking. But yet, self-care, can't say it enough, Thomas, especially for Thomas, because you talked before about the health problems. Self-care. I hope you are able to take some time and just take care of yourself and replenish from everything that you've had to go through. It's been a stressful 2018 on the job. They all have been, but self-care, if you, especially if you're saying breaking point, self-care, self-care. Watch that blood pressure. Other folks dialed in, if you have a hand up, thoughts, comments to share, you want to respond to any of the questions or what you've heard from listeners thus far.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Jay in St. Louis.
Yeah, I wanted to share another instance, if that was all right.
Let's hear it.
So one time in particular, I had, so we were talking about the office parties, and there was one offered, at my job on the 15th of this month. And, it was about 2 months of preparation. Everybody knew about it. The white man who was hosting it had actually, in my opinion, sexually assaulted me on the job earlier, about a year ago. And has invited me to the gun range multiple times, and I have yet to show. I just don't go. I avoid it at all costs. And I did the same thing with this one. But the way I kind of went about doing that is never fully committing to the engagement. I would just say, well, we'll see. It depends on my schedule. I would stay very ambiguous. Anytime they asked,
they would question me about whether or not I was attending. I would just say, yes, maybe, you know, if I have time. And then when the day came, I just did not go at all. And then also, speaking of varying degrees of codification, just lastly, very quickly, I'll say that because my job has a constant influx of new people, I've been able to kind of practice various methods of codification. And I think that when you're less codified up front, racists will try to befriend you. In my case, they have. They've tried to act friendly and then make or try to abuse you, like psychologically abuse you more often when you're less codified initially and then try to be more codified at a later date. It opens up the avenue for them to think they have some type of attachment to you that they can abuse emotionally and like can make character judgments about you and things like that. I've noticed that rather than if you just codified up front, then you just never have to acknowledge them in any meaningful way. So yeah, that's all I want to share. Thanks.
Important. I think that has come up like way, way back over the 10-year history. We've had lots of different anecdotes, experiences from victims who didn't necessarily start off being codified and then switched up. It's always way better to start off being codified. That way you can just lay that correct groundwork for how you want to be treated. It can be a lot different, especially the mistreatment that you referenced. It can be very challenging from what many, many folks have commented on. Very, very challenging once you have started off on the wrong foot, as they say, and then try to be a little more codified as you proceed. Wow, it can be. I've heard a lot of folks saying that they ended up being fired around that because they just kept hearing from whites, you've changed. Just don't smile as much. You're not as pleasant around us anymore. Something wrong with you? That sort of heard that frequently. Other folks dialed in if you have comments, wanted to respond to any of the questions. I guess I'll give the sentence again in case any folks were not here. So workplace scenario, particularly this is a job interview featuring three white women. How would you respond to get the job? How would you respond? It was, how would you incorporate the anti-oppression framework that our organization upholds? How would you respond to that question in an interview where you do want the job, where you're being interviewed by three white women? And we said, just for the sake of answering the question, when they say the anti-oppression framework of the company, just insert the standard racist, you know, rhetoric that, you know, we believe in not mistreating niggers and want to end marginalization, blah, 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 you know, whatever. But if any folks have a response to that, or if you want to share your code for how you respond to nigger being used on the job, would be grand. I thought that was great, too. Thomas, I think, was the only person thus far who said pulling out the recorder and seeing if they could get that recorded at some point. Grand as well. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, wanted to respond, feel free. Stacy in the UK, it is, make sure I get our timestamp, 2:15 a.m. Saturday, December 22nd.
Hello to you, Gus, and to the list. I've never been called a nigger at work, so, but actually you just reminded me, I do remember the one time in the workplace that I have heard that used, and someone actually meant it, was when I worked in a very small community-based organization. And there was a non-white male who was unemployed. He came in, he wanted some help to get, I guess, into work. He was looking for training, but he didn't have any idea really of what he wanted to do. And there was a non-white female with a white parent who was with me. She's the receptionist. And after he left, she just started speaking about him as if he was the worst thing on the face of the planet. And she says, look, you know, he's just coming here, he's got no clue, no clue whatsoever. And look at the way he's dressed, because it was quite warm and he had on winter clothes and a hat. And out under her breath, she said, "Nig." So she was about to say nigger, and then she realised who she was speaking to. And then she paused. And I looked at her and I said, well, I didn't acknowledge the nigger comment, but I definitely heard it. And I just thought, I said to her, yeah, well, he's just walked through that door because he wants some help. He doesn't know what help he needs. All he does know is that he wants to improve his circumstance. And I left it at that. And that was such a shock to me, because the hate in her voice, which was totally uncalled for, and the organisation was there to help people, getting funding to help people get into work. So that's the context in which I've actually been present when someone has used that word in a very real way, or serious way. And I guess it just speaks to the confusion. Anyway, in terms of the question you asked about the anti-oppression framework, I would answer the question as if I wanted the job. So give some kind of standard response and maybe an example of where I've used, I guess in the UK it would be some kind of equalities approach in the workplace to make sure everybody's treated the same. I wouldn't try and do anything other than focus on the objective, which is to get the job, but just in my head, observe the irony. And in terms of the Christmas lunch, I guess the week before last, so last week Friday, they had the office, so the full organisation's Christmas party. That, I guess, started about 5 o'clock, so technically after work. I was working from home that day because I wasn't feeling too well, so I avoided that one. However, this week, they had the team away day and team lunch. That was during the day, so there was no avoiding that. I really wasn't looking forward to going, but with the help of a conversation with my sister, I had a plan for how I would approach it. So I had created a list of things that I needed to do. So during the break times, so nobody could come and ask me anything that I didn't want to answer, or so that I didn't have to engage in too many nonsense conversations. I had my list of to-dos, and my list of to-dos were to do with things that I needed to get done at home that I couldn't do in the daytime. So finding out information over my phone, and just making plans for, other, I guess, self-care days. So constructive things, basically. And somebody did try and rope me into a conversation and inquire about my family, to which I gave a non-response. And then I spent a lot of time asking questions. A couple of things that I didn't get to add in last week, or I mentioned that there had been some sabotage to the desk that I've been allocated, and I had sent my manager a question about how we could ensure that every time I got back to the desk it hadn't been readjusted, and she sent a note out. I mentioned last week that I was working from home because I wasn't feeling well on the Friday, so I got her agreement that I could work from home. And because she was hot desking, she came to me and she says, I'm going to use your desk tomorrow. Is that okay? So I looked at her like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, it's not my desk. And carried on. And I know she was, it sounds like just a friendly statement. I just think nothing is informal and they're constantly testing us. And I think she was just, probably what's happened is that they're having conversations about Ms. Nigra having her desk allocated and, you know, getting out of her place. So I know that comment wasn't an innocent or innocuous comment. And one last thing I'll add. The racist suspect female who likes to leave filth on the desk, I overheard her having a conversation again with my manager, who's also her manager, about a particular project or a suite of projects, one which includes the one of the ones that I'm managing. And this race soldier is, like many other race soldiers, looking to ensure that she is in control. And even though she's technically not managing the project, you know, her ambition just is something she can't hide. So, standard operating practice anyway. So I overheard her and my manager having a conversation about having a meeting to discuss these particular projects. The following week, I had a catch up with my manager, and she mentioned to me that some arrangements that they agreed, had been agreed about the project that I was managing. Now, technically, if I'm the lead of the project and you're having conversations, it would be standard practice to involve the person who's the lead on the project in the conversation, not have discussions without them being present. But I'm used to how they operate. So she's feeding back to me what she's discussed with other people. However, she didn't mention this little race soldier. She mentioned a non-white female who I had put in a grievance about, that she had gone through all of these matters and in that morning and was feeding back to me. Now, she might well have had a conversation with her, but it wasn't the non-white female who raised the matter with her in the first place. And the fact that she omitted having the conversation with the race soldier and had no need really to bring the non-white female's name into the equation, I didn't say anything. I didn't say that I'd obviously overheard the other conversation taking place. I thought, okay, what's your agenda here? So obviously put me into conflict with the non-white female, which wasn't going to happen anyway. But it's an observation about how they're constantly trying to cause conflict between non-white people. And I will mute my line there, Gus, because I've been speaking for a while, but if there's time, I'll come back for further updates.
Much obliged, Stacey in the UK. That's such an important point about them consistently looking to incite conflict between non-white people on the job and elsewhere. But just as you said, coming in and mentioning this non-white person, not any of the other white people, but this non-white person, focusing the attention there. And I would say that's something you really have to be cautious about. In the workplace where directly, indirectly, whites, they love it. That's entertainment. Let's see how we can get the non-white people squabbling with each other. That'll be our entertainment for the week. Get them, arguing. And really, the system of racism, white supremacy, in order to function, they need non-white people to be in conflict. So, and you get both sides of the coin. You see non-white people getting along well, constructively, sharing great information, smiling with one another. Repulsive, horrid. In fact, I think there's a recording where Mr. Fuller was giving a talk and a black male stood up and said that, that a white person said that, oh yeah, we don't like seeing you black people. It was because I think it was like this black person was talking to another black person and they were just smiling, being courteous, talking about work stuff. And said, oh, yeah, we don't like seeing that, keep it moving. We don't want to see that in the hallway. That makes us upset. The portion about loved it. My desk. It is not my desk. The audacity even to have someone classified as white anywhere in the known universe to look at a black person and say, oh, do I have your permission to use this here? Like, I mean, really, after they've stolen and taken everything, like, unless they're in your actual house, but I need your permission to use it, especially we're on the job. I need to get your permission to use this as though it's got my name stenciled on it. And I, just the facts, most of the time, what they're talking about, the item and talking about, it'll have a property tag on it. They've ID'd it if they don't have an RID chip in. Like, this is our chair. This is our desk. This is our computer to remind anybody if they forget whose property this is. We need to be reminded of that and just in how we function. Do whatever you're going to do. I just ask, you know, if you all not leave rubbish and not mess over the chair if you're going to use the same area. We are sharing a workspace, not my workspace. Love it. Ignoring the lead, I thought that was important because that's something that they do worldwide. We're a black person. Now, we just talked about this. They said Thomas was in charge of the mail. They'll say you're in charge. They'll say you're the lead, in quotes, in a system of racism, white supremacy. Really? Most of the time, they don't say that with any meaning behind it unless it's time for you to be in trouble, for the nigger to take the blame for something that's wrong. It's not you're in charge, so we're going to sit down and allow you to dictate what's supposed to happen and to delegate responsibility and be into. That's not what it's going to be at all. It'll be you're the lead, and we already went over what's going to happen on this, and we'll try to keep you up to date as the project proceeds. All right, you're doing a great job, lead. That's, you know, what it generally tends to be with niggers, or being sabotaged all the way as you go through to try to make decisions. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Others who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if we missed you, you should definitely chime in. If you have observations, problems, you want to respond to anything that's been shared thus far.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is Miss Tien. I guess once you start learning about racism, what it is and how it works, and you're dealing with white people, it's like all of them seem like disgusting to you. But I've been working on my job. I've been with my new employer for, I'll say, about a little over 2 months now. I was unable to attend the Christmas party because my dad had surgery, and so I had to leave town that night. And a little over two months on the job, didn't have time off to take. And I said to the employee, like, yeah, I won't be here on Friday. I'm leaving out Thursday night, which was Thursday night was the Christmas party. So I didn't attend. And, you know, like I said, you know, I didn't ask, could I take the time out? I told him, I won't be here. I'm going to my dad's surgery. And so, yeah, I took the time off, went on my dad's surgery. Everything was fine with his surgery. Came back on Monday morning. Everything was fine. Two things that happened recently on my job, I guess workplace terrorism. My employer, one of the lending companies sent wire instructions to have a wire sent out. And I can't do wires. I can't sign checks. And so he forwarded the email to me about the wire instructions, and I guess he thought I was going to do the wire. So he gave me information to one of the bankers so I could, quote unquote, make it happen. And I didn't make it happen. And so he gets mad at me and tell me, you know, why I didn't make it happen. And like I told him, I don't do wires. I can't sign checks. And so the next day he sent out an email, like he sent it out 5:30 that morning. I'm not due until 8:30 that morning. And he said to me, I need this complete ASAP. And it was like an email with a spreadsheet. And I opened the spreadsheet. There was nothing in the spreadsheet to be complete. And so I emailed him back and I said, what exactly do I have to complete? And so he calls me to the office and we're going over what is to be complete. And I said, so what should I have completed in the spreadsheet? And he said, well, you should have added 2 months to the spreadsheet. I said, so you wanted me to update the spreadsheet, not complete the spreadsheet? And he was like, no, I needed you to update and complete the spreadsheet. And so he refused to acknowledge the way he communicated was totally incorrect. So that's my workplace racism. Thank you.
Even that is important. The last anecdote that you shared where this spreadsheet, apparently he just wanted a couple additional months added on to whatever was being documented. And it's just, it's gotta be some way of there was some sort of defect in the way that you completed the spreadsheet. That's gotta be the way it is. It can't be that, you know, I was not clear in articulating what I wanted. It can't be that just, oh, this is correct. You did this correct way. We just want to add two additional. No. It needs to be updated and completed because you did it incorrectly the first time. That sort of, you know, insistence that the black person, you know, doesn't really know what they're up to. You know, we need to got to keep an eye on you, that sort of thing. Stan, I think we talked about that last week, the consistent ways of undermining our sense of competence. So we always have this sense of inadequacy that we don't really know what we're doing, even when we could be doing things 100% right. And they're the ones who don't know what they're doing. We talked about that last week, I think. What was the first anecdote before you got to that one that you shared, ma'am? No, you said you
it
just...
was about the Christmas party. It was on Thursday night.
Yes. I'm so glad. Well, I hope your father is doing well, recuperating black self-respect. I was curious if any of your coworkers, because I don't know if they do this on your job, but I know many of us, I have been on a ton of them where it's, oh, this is a family. We're not, you know, just employed. This is a family. So did any of your coworkers-family, did they inquire about your father's surgery and his health after you came back from the Christmas or missed the Christmas party and came back?
Well, the owner of the company, you know, he was, concerned and wanted all the details before I even left. So, yeah.
Right on. Just curious. I know white sometimes the tackiness can come out in those Christmas parties. I've experienced that myself with being upset about missing it and or not really asking about, you know, your father. Not that I would want a whole lot of inquiry about that either. I wouldn't, you know, be trying to go through as little detail as possible. Thank you for your concern. He's healing. Like I said before, minimize being efficient so that I'm not talking and talking and talking. Whites are constantly on surveillance. So great job. And again, I hope your father doing well, taking care of himself. Love the black self-respect. It's not even a thought of asking. Of course, I am not going to be at the Christmas party. I will be with my father. Others who dialed in, if you have commentary you want to share, if you had comments on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed. While folks are lollygagging, again, we will be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down over the last 7 days. I guess we'll have time for folks to get in their holiday chit-chat as well, if any of that nonsense is going down with the relatives, folks with whom we share DNA. We'll go over that tomorrow as well. But compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Hopefully the Black Talk Radio situation. I'm not able to log in. That's why the archive is not complete for yesterday's broadcast. It's not available at Black Talk Radio Network. It is at SoundCloud, and I posted it already, but hopefully that'll be taken care of, so I'll be able to access the Black Talk Radio Network page under attack, context of white supremacy on all fronts. Mr. Reed has been working with us to help solve that problem, though. Folks have observations, thoughts, codification that they have worked out for the workplace. Number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. One thing that I'd forgotten, just since we're talking about it, and I am, you know, fond of mentioning policy and procedure. It might be interesting if you've read your full policy and procedure, then you should have a mental note if there's any wording about the Christmas party or office parties in general. I know I have been on jobs where that is in the policy and procedure manual, because they have a tendency, whites know themselves, they have a tendency for the debauchery to get out of control at those events. You heard Thomas in New York talking about the amount of beer that they brought in for this whole charade. So I would reread that policy. If you do have an office party, if you have to attend any of that nonsense, just go back and look over, because ours was serious. Ours was serious enough that they actually went over it in, what do they call, orientation, when they had new hires, because they talked about people being fired as a result of their conduct at some of these office parties. And they went kind of into detail about things that would get you fired in terms of if you did at a office party. So it might be good to look at that section again. If, you know, you have that sort of thing in your workplace, office party, I mean, holiday party, as they say. Other folks dialed in have observations, thoughts, comments.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I have quite a bit this week, a lot of observations. The first one is, I have this picture that I was going to send to you, Gus, a lot of, I guess, like candy or chocolates were handed out, I guess, as gifts. And it was definitely, I think some of it goes into the, I think Dr. Wilson would provide a great analysis on the chocolate aspect, because it's a giant M&M almonds bar that was given to me in a, I think the brand is L-I-N-D-T, Excellence. And it says extra creamy, milk chocolate, extra rich and creamy. And there's a candy cane where there's a message attached to it. And this was given out to everyone. And it reads, look at a candy cane. What do you see? Stripes that are red like the blood shed for me. White for my Savior, who's sinless and pure. J is for Jesus, my Lord, that's for sure. Turn it around, and the staff you will see, Jesus, my shepherd, is coming for me. That was a message taped onto a candy cane that was given out to everyone. And, like, number two is the ugly sweater. I made an analysis on a lot of the sweaters were the color black. And one sweater in particular was a white woman was wearing a sweater, and it said, Dear Santa, she did it. And it has a green arrow on it. And she says, man, the other lady didn't come to work today. So if you were to stand in front of her, it's an arrow going to what would be your right to show that the lady is sitting on the right of her. So that's strategic, and this has a black hood on it with Christmas lights. So keep in mind when it comes to ugly sweaters, a lot of the sweaters that they wore today were black. Some were pink and some were green. Number three is there was a black female that works up in the courts, and she said, well, I asked about like the fish. She has a pet fish on the desk, and she said she came in after, I think it was Veterans Day, and she noticed the fish was dead, and the tank, the fish tank, the top was off, and it was next to the tank, and the fish was there. So I'm like, I wonder who could have did this, who could have done this. So I don't know. I just wanted to add that one in because I suspect that was somebody practicing racism, and the white person has a fish on their desk in another part of the building, but their fish is still alive. And the fish is a black fish too. Number three is there was a comment made by the clerk back when that malfunction happened with the passport picture. And he made a comment, and he said, man, maybe we ought to put some Gorilla Glue on that. And the reason I think that's significant is it was the black female that reported the projector, the hardened structure of the projector hitting the white woman in the head. So he said, maybe we ought to put some Gorilla Glue on that thing. My next one is there was a conversation that I had with a non-white female employee. Apparently, there's been some misconduct going on by the black male that is in the civil court director position. And I think he may be in metaphorically Bill Cosby territory. Because, you know, I've been hearing them say some things that I know is definitely inappropriate. So the female is saying that before he took that job, the female that I've been classifying as the warden said that she didn't want it to go through because he had five, reports about him saying something of a sexual nature. So he made a comment to a white woman saying that you should take your breasts off the desk. And she also said that there's been text messages of him sending this white woman, and this person is married too, saying that you should hold your shirt up because your boobs are showing. So apparently, it's a lot of the. I kind of predicted this would happen because it's unfortunate that you have to see other victims that have been contaminated behaving and speaking in this manner. My next one is there was an incident that occurred with this guy. He was coming into the building. And he was recording. He had two cameras. He was recording the building, like personnel and staff. So he came in and talked to my coworker and was asking all of these, I guess, law-related questions about the marriage contract in the state or something like that. So two bailiffs come in and they approach the guy. And from what I could see, it looks like they were being friendly with this guy. Like they weren't really trying to be aggressive. Like, hey, you need to leave the premises immediately or something. So they ended up walking away from the guy. They didn't apprehend him or nothing. So once he finally left, the female sergeant says, oh, well, he's not supposed to be in here recording employees and staff or whatever. And the next officer said, well, yeah, you know, make sure you cite 1.16 administrative order for the 8th Judicial Circuit And I'm like, where was all that before? They let the dude just mosey along and record stuff in the building, the courthouse. So he got to walk out on his own, and nobody can say who the guy name was or nothing. And my next one is my phone line, like my extension. One of the white men, one of the top administrative people. And this, I wanted to share this one because it led in from what I just last stated about the guy recording. I think he did this to distract me, because he was saying, well, is your phone line blank, 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 4 digits? I said, yeah, that's it. Well, you know, I tried to call and I just couldn't get through. So he goes in to pick up the phone line and dial numbers and digits. I'm like, is he trying to tap my phone or something? I don't know. Just to speak on that surveillance aspect. And my last one is, like 2 days after that, because this happened on Tuesday. So yesterday, the female, the warden, she was telling my black supervisor, quote unquote, that this guy who was recording apparently went and posted something on YouTube. Okay. So this guy got images of, you know, whoever he may have recorded. And I'm like, how did they know? I mean, how did they know that he had a video up and they can't identify the guy? So I'm in the process of trying to find that video. And apparently they know the people got a website and everything. So it's just very suspicious activity going on. And my last one is, I've been having a lot of, I guess, somewhat forced conversations, people trying to be nice, and the tackiness of the legal counsel lady. She has been getting me to do these copy requests where I copy the whole file. And she's like, hey, you know, since they're not paying for the request, you know, you don't even have to, staple them or anything. I was like, oh, okay, that's good. So I can get them done faster. So she's holding up a fist to do a fist bump. So I said, I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? So I do the fist bump. And see, it's a pattern of this, because I go in to do the copy, and she walks into a person's office, and he comes out, the person who she was at, he comes up and tries to strike a conversation about, what am I doing for Christmas with my family? So I said, it'll just be something subtle, nothing too major. What about you? So he goes into a long, extensive story about what they're going to be doing. So a lot of focus on me, I wanted to report. And that's all I have for now. Thanks.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. I can't recall off top, but you can definitely add the fist bump to the list of tacky exchanges, the peace out, all of the what's up, bro, how's it going, all of that. I would stick that there. I just can't imagine, at the courthouse, no less. I cannot imagine this white woman going through the courthouse and giving the fist bump to the judge, the bailiff, as people are coming in, let's see. It was some gosh. The black male facing the Cosby situation. What to say? We read the section in Dr. Curry's book yesterday, The Man Not, where he said, this was a statement of fact, where he said that unfortunately we live in a world where everybody, white people and non-white people, unfortunately believe, if we're talking about a black male, if there's any doubt, more likely than not, he's a rapist. Like that was his concluding thought on, you know, what it means to be a black male. And I think I asked listeners if people thought that was true, and I think it was unanimous. Everybody said, yeah, I think that's about the size of it. So I was thinking about that today, and I agreed. It was unanimous. I agreed. I was thinking about that today, and just like, man, you know, if I had, If I had that way of thinking about things earlier in life, that would have changed things drastically, especially on job conduct. Like, wow, like I am sure that this black male does not understand. We live in a world where people already think you are a rapist. That type of thinking, I don't think you would be talking to any white women about pull your shirt down, you know, your bosom or any of that. I mean, just that, even to make comments like that, to hear that from black people, because it's not the first time that I've heard that sort of thing, just shows our lack of understanding of racism, white supremacy. Do not understand at all. Let's see. The religion of white supremacy, the candy cane. I'm surprised they could even give out something like that at the courthouse, no less. They normally at least try to have some sort of tacky pretense that you can't do a whole lot of like overt religious type things on the job. And that, well, I mean, the religion of white supremacy, it's the white, I think they were talking about the red blood and the whiteness of the candy cane for our pure white savior, the religion of white supremacy. Indeed. Dr. Welsing, I think, would say something about the candy cane too, for sure. Let's see. The killing of the Negro fish in the office, I suspect not a accident, what have you. When the same folks who talk about how much they love dogs and that sort of thing, Negro fish, even Negro pets, period. That's why I said I'm a big fan of not having extracurriculars in the office, because I would not be surprised at that sort of conduct, regardless, fish, candy bowl, anything. I'm a big advocate of not having extracurriculars in the office for non-white people. They mistreat non-white people. They mistreat black people. And sometimes that just transfers to black things, period. Remember Justice the horse? It was Shadow at first, and then it changed his name to Justice. Mr. Fuller was talking about that. Other folks dialed in, much obliged, caller in Florida. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up with commentary to share, proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I know, like Gus had mentioned earlier, about having to share workspaces more intimately with white people and making sure to constantly remind yourself that this is not, you know, your computer, your desk, or whatever. I know. More recently, I've been kind of dealing with that same situation. There's a suspected white woman that I have to share a desk with. And every time when she would see me, she would turn off the computer. And the first time, because we work different hours, but I've been working different hours. But for the first couple of weeks, I didn't see her, the computer would be on. Now, the only reason why I'm like this kind of like, I guess, was getting to me because unfortunately I'm a victim, and sometimes I'll be like really at the cusp of being late, and then that would kind of exacerbate the problem. But I told my supervisor and, you know, another suspected racist, and they were like, oh no, well, you know, everything is fine, you know, you're supposed to do that. And I'm like, and I just kept asking questions, like, so just randomly, you know, there's not like, it's not just on like a certain day of the week. It's just that, you know, literally the only correlation I could come up with is when she would see me. So she was like, no, you're supposed to turn them off. Everybody's supposed to turn them off. I'm like, since I've been here, if anybody, if I had to, you know, share another desk with someone, then not be a problem. You know, I never had to come on and, you know, have to worry about stuff, you know, either being turned off or whatever. But of course, you know, it's just a suspected racist, you know, just really dismissed it. And I was kind of, you know, just wondering thing, like, you know, questioning myself, like, okay, maybe I am, you know, overthinking it or whatever. And So that was actually the second time that I finally decided to tell, you know, a manager or whatever. And the third time when this individual saw me and I didn't, you know, I don't ever say anything to her. I automatically knew coming in that next morning, like I automatically knew the computer was going to be turned off, which it was. So I just have to, you know, freshen up on the code and not try to be so upset because, you know, we should really understand that if we're going to get this type of mistreatment. I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Expecting mistreatment or just being prepared to not get correct treatment. Either way, folks want to phrase it. Unfortunate, but that is the system of racism, white supremacy, and the importance of why we want to be codified in the workplace. I'm never surprised when why I think Josh Wicked and many others have even said that that's something we should kind of be prepared for. And in this case, you weren't, you know, accusing anyone of practicing racism, but just asking about the turning off of the computer, that generally the pattern will be finding some other way of explaining what's happening, that it's not incorrect, that you're not being mistreated, that that's our policy, or, you know, whatever it is being explained away, that it's not anything that's being directed at you. That's pretty typical. In the system of white supremacy, exactly as you said, to have you kind of thinking, oh, well, this is just me, or, you know, I'm making this up in my head and that sort of thing. Talked about that for 2 weeks now. It's super common in the system of racism, white supremacy. And just I would say generally when things are happening, particularly if they're causing you a problem, even an inconvenience, I would say whites should not get the benefit of the doubt. I'll put it that way. They should not get the benefit of the doubt. There's so much history of them doing things to sabotage, deceive, and terrorize us in a variety of different ways that no benefit of it. I mean, why? Anyway, number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks have codification that has worked out that they would like to share. If you want to respond to any of the questions that were asked or anything that has been shared, discussed on the broadcast thus far, feel free. Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi, greetings to everyone. I'd like to share a couple things. We've got one person that's on our job who's suspected racist, and many times he makes reference to a lot of political discussions, a big Trump supporter, and talking so much in favor of Trump and all. Makes comments out loud about, you know, we need to build a wall and all this other stuff there. Other people come by, excuse me, his cubicles, and I'm a few cubicles over from him, and the area that we work is kind of distant away from the main area where everybody works. So whatever is discussed can be heard from amongst those about five of us that sit in that area. So whatever he speaks and other people come to visit him and talk in his cubicle, it can be heard in that whole area there. So there's always discussions, people coming and talking about, you know, what Republicans have done and what Democrats, how stupid they are. And there's a lot of, you know, negative comments about Democrats all the time. And so I question HR about, you know, what's the policy concerning political discussions about, you know, negative comments about or derogative words towards particular parties. And there was nothing in the policy except for if any discussions are distractive or, you know, causing disruption or distracting people from their job. That's the only thing that they can kind of relate to as, you know, that type of discussion could be disruptive to work. other than that, there's nothing else in the policy there. So I wanted to point that out because, you know, being the Trump supporter he is and speaking in a way that he does, there's a couple other things that he's done over time. We were at the company holiday party, and we had a couple of people that were visiting from the Philippines, and they had a little raffle going on. And one of them, actually both of them, had won a prize. And so he comments from people, you know, to other workers, mainly one other person that sits in our same area at work. We're sitting up with this. Said, hey, go offer them a couple of bucks and, you know, $2, and they'll be rich. You know, and you go offer them a couple of bucks there, they'll love it, they'll be rich. So little comments there and there pertaining to race. I remember they had the big flood and a hurricane rather that happened a while back and in Florida where the people are breaking in, stealing things, looting that was going on. But of course, he pulled it up online and commenting about it and saying, yeah, see, you know, the people that's stealing shoes, you know, you see they're never stealing any wolf boots. You know, they're stealing just sneakers. They know why, right? But they don't want to work. You know, things like that. He also works at a gun store, and so he makes reference quite often to about guns and have others where it's talked about guns. And he would many times even ask, you know, kind of out loud, jokingly, hey, want to buy a gun? Want to buy a gun? But people would come by and discuss guns. And one, this was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, one person came over and was asking, you know, questions about a gun. And then the guy was saying, you know, I want some better target practice. I'm practicing on still objects. You know, I want moving up. So the same guy who did Trump support, the main guy I'm talking about here, he says, well, we can't shoot any of them. They're all gone. And, you know, he says it out loud, you know, so everybody can hear that sits in that area. And I didn't say anything, and not sure if I should or, you know, say anything, but it just kind of caught me like, wow, okay. I mean, it's obvious. We know where he's coming from. But for him to actually say that, I shouldn't be surprised. But, you know, that really just kind of, you know, opened my eyes a whole lot more about where he's coming from. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much what I wanted to share about him. So it wasn't anything that was directed towards me. But just the fact that those things were said in my presence and in the presence of other people there, you know, that's the kind of language or kind of conversations that kind of go on there at work there. That's pretty much it. I wanted to share that. Thanks.
Much obliged.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes, I was just thinking when the last caller was giving his report, could be wrong, incorrect, but because he's at the work site and I'm not. But it seemed as though that this one person kind of like stands out for what he says. And I would kindly ask him, can I record you? Or, you know, that sort of thing, since he seems to want to draw a lot of attention to himself by saying the things that he's saying. And I would go to him and just politely ask him, sir, can I record you? You know, and then see what he says, see how he will respond to that question.
That's interesting. I have to think about that one. If he's that prolific about it, he might not care. It might stop him completely. If that's going to be the case, do you, retired firefighter, do you think there's any potential problems? Like, do you think he could go report him and say, hey, you know, we got a nigger talking about, you know, spying on us around here. Maybe he's been recording us already. Do you think that sort of thing could happen?
It's possible, but that would be a situation whereas white people can lie even if you do have some sort of evidence that never happened. But I would say I'm just taking it in the way that I'm listening to the last caller. And it sounds like this guy I've seen it on the job that I've retired from, that there are certain people who takes on a character that they enjoy being the attention of their coworkers, because probably when they were in elementary school or grade school, they didn't get that much attention at all. And this even is a situation with a lot of white people. And all of a sudden, because they are saying what they're saying on the job, and a lot of times it's actually kind of disturbing even to other white people in some cases. That gives them they don't really care, that they just love the attention. I think it would be a challenge to that person if you ask him, like I said, politely, sir, can I ask you a question? In other words, and just like that, and then, you know, get their permission about asking the question, then ask the question. Can I record you? You seem to have an opinion about a whole lot of things, and you seem to want to let people know about what you think about things that doesn't have that much to do with the job at all. Would you like to be recorded? and go from there. Just, you know, listen to what you may not even have that intent to really actually record the person, but just to see what they say. That's all I'm saying. It's like an inquiry, so to speak.
Interesting. What do you think? Male caller who dialed in with our Trump supporter here on the job. What do you think about that suggestion?
Not sure, because I would think it would kind of spark a lot more negative reactions, where there'll be more comments. Oh, you better watch it now because he's going to be recording us. You know, things like that. I mean, I don't know, but it just seems like it would spark a little bit more negative reactions there. Maybe being a little bit more mindful of what they say, but he's the kind of person where, from what I observed, he doesn't really care. Doesn't care what people say or do. Actually, also, to add to that, he's got about another year before he retires, so he doesn't really care. He's got that short mentality, you know.
Okay, because I'm listening to you now, and I'm hearing the word they also, meaning that perhaps maybe he has a willing audience. Would I be correct in saying that?
You said a willing audience. I'm sorry.
Yes, a willing audience, meaning that there are some people who are actually interested in what he has to say, and maybe they participate with him. It is?
Oh, for sure. They'll lots of.
Oh well, in that case, then I take what I said back then, because I was kind of like matching it with my work experience, you know, on the fire department. There's plenty of guys, primarily males for the most part, who are like that, but it's in some cases it's one that's at that particular station. And they take it upon themselves to do that type of thing, and if you challenge them, by experience of challenging them, they kind of like will get quiet. There was, for instance, there's one incident in my work history, and I was and myself and another former coworker who we still have a black male who we still have a very close relationship. We were talking about this particular white male. He even when he's off duty, he shows up and he thinks he's a unpaid comedian, and primarily he starts off with jokes from a quote unquote ethnic perspective, which is code, because the only reason why he's saying it from that perspective, because he doesn't want to say directly racially, because I mean, not racially, but against black people, because I may be sitting in the station. And basically when he got started, I told him, look, I'm on duty. You're not, I don't want to hear that. And he got quiet because he knows the rules and regulations as far as they're concerned. You know, when you're off duty, you know, rank doesn't have a whole lot of factor, you know, as far as they're concerned, as opposed to somebody who is on duty. And I was kind of like matching that particular type of person up with the person that you were referring to. But no, if he has an audience and also participants, I go back to the silence code. And I think you were mentioning that also. I'll go back to the silence code and you know, just have a ball. Long as it's not directly at me, and even so, I would ignore it. Wouldn't even answer to it. Wouldn't even turn my head to it. You know, as far as that concerned, and that would be my code based on what became much more clearer to me. Thank you.
I reckon, just real quick, what would be the reason for not doing the recording if there's a willing audience, as opposed to if it's just this one individual? What would be the difference why you wouldn't record if it's a group thing?
Well, it's like I heard, I think you and also the caller stated, is that now that particular technique would actually turn on you, or in this case, it would be me. It would turn on me. Whereas now the attention would be, well, okay, well, you are doing something that is also against the rules and regulations, and we need to do some research. You may be doing something against the rules and regulations, and we may have to do some research to see if that is true. So that's why I wouldn't do it. But if he's singling himself out and doing it on his own, and really the whole room is quiet every time he does it and it's consistent, then I probably would ask the question about asking to record the person.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged, retired firefighter. That's interesting about it becoming distracting, because that could be something that could be employed. The male caller who was saying that when you asked about, is this sort of conversation acceptable in the work environment, and you said they didn't really have a policy except unless the dialogue becomes distracting. Because that's going to be discretion too, in terms of what is the threshold for something becoming a distraction in the workplace. And if it's a willing audience, then I'm sure they're like, oh no, we're not distracted at all. This is great. It helps, you know, keep things lively and makes it more enjoyable. The ignoring might be the best route, to go in that one. Although I would still definitely record, and I would be mindful still. I would just be mindful about, you know, are there things that are coming up that are distractions in the workplace then, since that's what I've been told. Any other folks have suggestions on how they would deal with this situation or what they've heard thus far? Right on. Definitely shouldn't be.
Can I say one more thing, Gus?
Let's hear it.
I would if there is what I don't know what he would call it on his job, but from time to time, you know, on a job they have like meetings where everybody is sitting around and they're talking about the job of quote unquote how to make interactions more mindful, that sort of thing, to improve on interaction in the job. And I would bring it up in terms of a question. I will bring it up in terms of a question, you know, about a means to package the question. I just can't think of it right now, but I would put it in whatever I would say in that particular meeting. If anybody have any suggestions or any thoughts, to you know, because sometimes, you know, most jobs have that particular day. It may be once a month or something like that. They would call it battalion meetings on the job that I was on, and I would bring it up in terms of a question. I wouldn't call a person's name or anything like that, but I would bring it up in terms of a question and just see what kind of reaction we get, because by doing that, now it would be on record that it was mentioned.
Love getting questions asked at staff meetings, those sort of events. Oftentimes they'll have notes. So this will be on official record that the question was asked. Mm-hmm. And then this is the response, what they might call an official response or official policy on how we, you know, address this matter. That can be spectacular. They'll have the notes generate. You won't even have to take notes that day. They'll generate the diary page for you when they send you the notes for the meeting. You can just staple that right in the question that I asked, and this is the response. I did want to make sure. Yes, sir.
I'm just really quick about the recording. I would recommend that you would just bring in some kind of device, maybe like, because I know they have a lot more covertly operating, like smaller gadgets that can do it. But I can do the recording. That way it's more explicit, because if you were to like ask them about it, in my opinion, they would be a lot more refined and they won't be as more blatant. Like how that one story was where the guy, he had a whole bunch of recordings. I think it was up in the Michigan area, and they were just like completely blatant and overt with their racism. He was able to capture so much. And what he, if anybody remembers this, what he was doing, he was initiating. He was either initiating conversation with the racists and trying to get them to express more of their racism. Like, so I'm a monkey, huh? He said, yeah, you are a monkey. You're lazy and you're this and you're that. And see, so they don't know that you have your device right there. And you're capturing it all. And just, because I know it depends state by state when it comes to the recording, but I think you'll definitely get a lot more of the raw racist behavior that way.
Agreed. Absolutely. I do remember that case. I think he had like 160. It was a massive amount, like I think over 150 easily. But you see, that's what they call the preponderance. This is not a one-off thing. This is over and over and over. And I think it was over like months that he had gathered all this. That, wow, quite a bit of workplace documentation. But yeah, I think that's a great recommendation as well. I did want to make sure we didn't minimize the gun-toting whites that have been mentioned in workplace racism and having whites, because that's been a theme too in workplace racism. White people casually referencing guns in the workplace, or frequently referencing guns in the workplace, or talking about going out to shoot in the workplace. That sort of thing should not be minimized. We're talking about race soldiers, armed race soldiers. We should already be thinking that some of the whites that we work with are armed. Any white person that's talking about guns in the workplace, oh yeah, we should suspect this fella or this gal. Definitely, we should suspect that they're armed, could be armed, anything of that sort. Be very, very careful, cautious in your dealings with them. This is someone who's basically telling us that I revel in violence and thinking about being able to pull out my gun. And what is this? What did he say? I need to get more practice. Tired of shooting at these stationary targets. Isn't that what he said, sir?
That's correct. Yeah. And again, the other gentleman said, we can't shoot the Indians. They're all dead. They're not around anymore.
Cannot be minimized. cannot be minimized, that right there. And for that to be made in the workplace, like, my God, that another one, put that in the workplace journal right there. You have an incident that happened at work. Bam, pull out my workplace journal. I remember that day when Todd was talking about that. That put a note in my mind right there. Something could be off about Todd. That'd be the first thing that I said. And they put a microphone in my face. That's what I mean. Any sort of comments like that, these are race soldiers. We should be very, very mindful, take anything like that seriously. And over the year, I can remember a number of folks who have commented about white people doing this sort of thing, just casually commenting about their shooting and firearms on the job. Can you imagine a black person being able to talk about their firearms and guns like that in a workplace? And it's, you know, no big deal. Right on. Second Amendment. Woohoo. Other folks. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I just want to add one other thing. Not the same person, someone else in the workplace made reference that they were having a political discussion about Democrats and all. And he literally said one of the other, another person in a different section of the workplace just came right out and said, you know, when I retire, you know, I just want to be a sniper. I would blow his head right off. Talking about the governor of the state, I would blow his head right off. And I was like, wow, I wouldn't even have the gall to say that in a workplace. But that's, again, like you said, white people with their guns and their, you know, their views using their weapons. But to literally say that about the governor. Yeah.
Definitely make sure you get that in the workplace. I mean, you got tons of things. If there's ever an incident at your job, man, I would run to the, man, I knew this was going to, I've been taking notes. Look at all this. They've been talking about assassinating the governor. I hope he got extra protection. And, you know, just go read through it. Those, again, this is a system of racism, white supremacy. Dr. Welsing talked about this all the time. Violence is required, celebrated, and especially violence against black people. Def, I would take all of that seriously, right? All of that. You never know. And there's so many incidents of white terrorists going out and having their fire. This is exactly what they're talking about. I'm tired of shooting at the target. It's time for the real thing. All of that I would take real seriously and write that down. And I would even check, because sometimes with all the incidents that have happened, they're getting different policies where in some places that sort of conversation is not even supposed to be taking place in the workplace. So, yeah, I would be real serious about any firearm, white firearm discussion in the workplace. I would take that very seriously.
Right. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Based on just what you said, because recently there have been some incidents that has been reported anywhere from quote unquote a child in high school who made some sort of threat on a computer that was quote unquote joking, and as well as down here also one of the students who became, it's actually on a celebrity status, that was a part of the Stoneman Douglas massacre, quote unquote. He was threatened by a by someone who was in support of NRS, and he was arrested and still in jail right now as we speak. But I would say it becomes complicated when a black person complains. I would figure, just like most anything else. But I would kind of consider it on that angle, you know, as far as the person is talking about, directly talking about killing somebody on the job, whether it's the governor or whoever, that type of talking, because it is, even white people are making it a major concern in this part of the world now. The superintendent of Dade County Public Schools stated that even with school-age children who have been doing it lately down here. There's somewhere up to a number of somewhere around 50 incidents that news said that he would work to have them in trouble to the full extent of the law. And he's talking about, quote unquote, children. You know, so it is something to think about to go along that particular angle as far as dealing with someone who is literally talking about using firearms or any type of physical violence as far as on the job itself. Yeah.
With all the shootings and such going on, especially if it's been one in your area, so many of them, if I was in Florida or California, any of those, like I said, it's been so many of them. If I was in any of those areas, I would look at the policy and procedure or ask on the job, do they have a policy about firearms on the job, discussions about firearms and shooting on the job, just see what they say. You can ask that. That's a pretty, I would think, pretty innocuous, pretty harmless question that you can ask just to get details and see. But that might be one that you can use if you're here in Hawaii. And regardless of whether you say anything or not, record. That is definitely something you want, you know, documented. Other folks dialed in, do you have commentary you wanted to share?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, everyone. It's caller from the 712 here. And I only called in late because I just got out of my work. But I want answers from the cows, if y'all got them, if y'all can help me out. How do you overcome in your job, how do you overcome, like, I'm going to try to explain this the best that I can. I've been working at this job for a year, and I've been doing really well. And so they said that I was a super agent, and they wanted to give me a raise, and they wanted to put me up as like a supervisor or something at that job. But I'm discouraged to do it because I don't want to be in charge of a whole group of white people like that. It would be like maybe 12 or 13 people, and they're going to be mostly white because I live in the Midwest. And there's mostly white people here. And I feel discouraged. I feel like I don't want to have a defeatist type attitude where I don't want to excel at my job. But really right now, that job, I mean, it's okay. I'm studying information technologies, networking and securities right now. So that job, it's okay. But I would like to have better pay, but I'm totally discouraged because I just don't want to be, I mean, I know I wouldn't truly be in charge of them, but I don't feel comfortable with that. And I'm thinking, should I just go with my gut feeling or how I'm really examining this and like just don't take it? Or that's why I'm calling into the cows today, just trying to get some suggestions. It's a call center, a very loose, laid back environment. And then y'all were talking about guns in the workplace. Now, at my job, that's interesting that y'all were talking about that, because at my job in training, and it's in the handbook, you cannot come to work talking about firearms. And even in training, everybody was looking puzzled, like, you know, who would come to work talking about firearms? And, you know, the trainer was like, you know, you'd be surprised and whatever. But you're not supposed to talk about that at my job. But that's my contribution about that conversation. But what do y'all think that like, how can I either not be discouraged, or do you think I should just go with how I'm analyzing it and just not want to be in charge of like a group of white people like that? I mean, I truly wouldn't be in charge, of course, but I'm put up as a supervisor, and I don't know. What do you all think? If anybody has some suggestions, I really would appreciate it. And I'll mute my line and listen. And if y'all want me to say something, I'll say something. Thank you.
I reckon, just real quick, and then we'll get folks' thoughts. What problems do you think could potentially happen, you know, if you take this job? What, you know, do you think what bad things, what problems could happen?
I don't think that the people would, I don't think that the people would not embrace me or anything, but I don't think that they would even cooperate with anything I said. I'm more of, you know, a laid back person, and really I'm to myself at work. So I'm kind of surprised that they offered this to me. Yeah, maybe they won't even listen, or maybe I'll have troubles with them not, you know, not taking direction on the best way to do the job just because I am a Black woman. And I have seen it happen before at other jobs, but that's what I think a big problem would be. And then they would use that and say, well, oh, it's not working out. You can't even be a supervisor. Maybe you can't even work here no more. Everything, you know, it's over. Bye. And yeah, that's the main problem I think I would run into, the people not wanting to, you know, just take direction.
What do folks think? Yay, nay, take the promotion or decline?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
My suggestion would be, if there's an opportunity to make the money, then go for it. Take the money, make the money, but be alert. Be alert, be mindful that there may be jealous people, especially people who may not want to take lead from a Black person, and maybe even as well if there are other white men that are on that would be underneath you or direct reports to you. That might even be another you know, key group of people to kind of be very alert about Black woman in charge of white men. You know, that might not sit too well with a lot of white men. But again, if someone's putting you up for that opportunity, they must see something in you to even acknowledge that. You know, if there's leadership qualities that are in you, I would say, you know, step up to it and take it on. But be alert, be wise, and be mindful of that there's potentially jealous people potentially trying to set you up for a fall, try to backstab, do all the things that are possible to cause you to fail. You know, so you'd have to be on your toes, being on time, before time, doing all the things to, again, be very alert. That's my suggestion.
Thanks for that, caller.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, there is no way that I would tell you not to take that job. Basically, from me listening, it just sounds like you have a little bit of apprehension, which is understandable, definitely. I surely wouldn't tell you, okay, you don't need to take that job. I actually would, if we knew one another, I actually would tell you to go ahead and, you know, take the promotion, ask questions to the person who is making that offer to you. Mr. Fuller mentioned about, and he used a lot of metaphor. He used a metaphor called the three T's. And, I'm going to try to, I know one of them is training. I just can't think of the other two. You know, just ask questions about the job and the training of it. Ask, you know, if there's some training that's necessary. I don't know, but it probably is on a lot of jobs in itself, especially when you get promoted. You know, just go for it. You know, go for it. You know, like I said, I understand the apprehension. On the job itself, let alone talking about, you know, racism, white supremacy being practiced. But I think once you make a continuation from your progress, which is obviously that's what you're a progressive type of person, and you continue to study and learn everything about what this new task is, and whatever happens that's beyond your control, then that's what it is. It's beyond your control. And hopefully I made some sense in what I was stating. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. I feel like I know you. You said if you knew me, you would tell me to take it. But I've been listening to you for a while. But thank you for that suggestion. Appreciate that.
Hi, guys.
Stacy in the UK, 3:36 a.m. Saturday morning.
Hi. Yeah, just to the lady caller who questioned. Obviously, it's her decision whether she takes the job or not. What I would say, two things. You need to get yourself into the right frame of mind if you do take the role. And part of that is about, you know, building up your own self-confidence, although I completely 150% identify with your concerns, and having managed stuff before, all kinds of things can happen. That said, it doesn't always have to be a negative experience. But the other point to acknowledge, and I think you did, was that you're not really in charge anyway. So I would make a point of going into the role, if you have it, not only requesting and making sure that you receive the training, but also your strategy for how you're going to operate in the role. So where you're anticipating potential conflict with employees, whether they or reports, whether they are male, female, white, non-white, make sure that any so-called decisions you make are already agreed with your managers. That way, there's less opportunity for the conflict to get back to you. And even if your reports believe that it's your decision, you already have a sign-off of what it is that you're going to do. So there's less opportunity or less likelihood of there being any issue directly for you, because anything that you're doing, you've already had permission to do. I'm in my land there, guys.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other folks want to respond? My recommendation would be to take the promotion. I will say, I do think it is important to acknowledge our intuition, feelings, whatever. Sometimes these are signals from the Creator. It is important to acknowledge those. You get those feelings for a reason. I think it's logical to be apprehensive that, you know, these whites might be trying to sabotage you, or the whites that you're supposed to be supervising, in quotes, might not listen to you, and that sort of thing. All are true. But if you already have a plan beyond, this is not, didn't sound like you're trying to be at this job forever. I definitely think it's always great to be able to get experience saying that you're a supervisor, that you can add that to your resume, regardless of whatever future plans that you have, to be able to already add that in, that you have experience as a supervisor, can be nice moving forward in your career. You can make a few extra nickels. You can learn more, which is always encouraged. I know Mr. Fuller always encourages Black people to try to learn as much as they can, that is a big part of how we can solve this problem, replacing white supremacy with justice, in terms of Black people learning constructive things that would be helpful. So I would say take it and keep every bit of the suspicion that you have that they're going to be trying to undermine you and set you up to fail or not listen to you. Keep all of that suspicion as you take the promotion, so that you can be alert to those problems as they inevitably come up. Don't want to be pessimistic, but, you know, following logic. And definitely underscore what a retired firefighter said about asking for training in advance, I think, to make sure that you are set up to succeed, what training do you have available to make sure that I'm set up for success in this position? That might be the exact way that I asked the question. Think about it for a weekend. Maybe I would, but something in the ballpark of that. Any other folks, comments that they wanted to share? If we missed you totally, or if you wanted to share your own situation or what folks have already brought to the table this evening.
Can I be heard?
Mr. Steele.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. And I want to follow up on a situation that I have been pursuing for some time now. And I've given some details throughout, my tenure here on workplace racism. So I'll say that a project that I've been working on with respect to a former employer is coming to a head, and a settlement has been reached, and checks are being cut. So I would have to say, officially from personal experience, take notes. And then when everything comes to a head, when everything, you know, seems to be, you know, that time when they're getting ready to terminate, that's when you bring your notes out and you make your complaints. And likely, you know, some sort of action is being taken, or even if you have been fired, if you have sufficient notes and you take them to a lawyer, and they find grounds to go after your former employer, do that, because oftentimes the arbitration costs alone are going to be into the tens of thousands of dollars. Now, a good corporation, especially a large corporation, is usually going to know this, and they're going to be able to determine that it'll probably be cheaper to settle with you than it is to actually fight this out in any sort of arbitration setting. Now, if they want to opt for a trial and they want to go and take everything public, this is going to be extremely rare, simply because most firms, they do have you sign an arbitration clause. So as to avoid, you know, airing out any sort of internal goings on in the organization, especially in this current time period where they're going to be sensitive to any sort of claims of any sexual or physical impropriety. Even if it's as simple as somebody touched you involuntarily, write it down. Keep detailed notes. When you're able to present all these notes to a lawyer and they determine that you have a case, you're from my experience and from the experience of a few other people who have been informing me, you're in the money. You will get paid something. And in my case, my something was enough to justify the time that it took. It came at no expense, no real personal expense to me. I didn't pay my lawyer anything other than, you know, what's coming out of the settlement. And then we, at one point in time, had to actually file this in court to get them to move. They took out some filing fees for my settlement. But at the same time, I mean, hey, it's really good. You know, I didn't have to, you know, construct any sort of letter. I didn't have to write down anything from the Constitution or anything like that. I just went to an employment attorney, spelled out my grievances, and then they went ahead and sought out solutions that work for me. And the great thing is that when you are successful in this, your attorney is, you know, eventually becomes a friend to you, and they're more privy to listen to all your other problems to see if there's any more money that they can help you secure. And in my case, there just happens to be. So, I mean, like, I think this is the start of a fruitful relationship, or at least the continuation of a fruitful relationship, and just more knowledge and more money, more coins. And I didn't have to sit behind the desk, or I didn't have to, you know, slave or exchange too much of my personal time. No, it was my attorney's time that was the most time that was spent on this. So I would wholeheartedly recommend taking notes, wholeheartedly recommend going after any employer that makes you feel any type of way at all. I have to say this, at all, unless the only caveat I have to this is if you're in a very, you're in a very small field where whereby people are aware of the moves that you make and that you are highly visible. If you're highly visible, you know, some of these the suggestion may not be the best course of action. But I mean, you know, sue everybody.
That's classified as white, I would add. But bravo, Mr. Steele. Congrats on getting your coin. Document. Talked about that for the duration of the existence of workplace racism. Really making sure that you're recording things, and then when you present that information. But document. You don't have to respond verbally to everything on the job. Just make notes. Outstanding effort, Mr. Steele. Let's see. Are there any, I guess as we're heading towards the conclusion, any folks that we missed completely, or any folks have thoughts, questions, comments they wanted to make sure that they get in before we get ready to wrap things up? Nabbed everyone, or no extra. Didn't hear any holiday party updates. Don't know if we got all the folks who had to navigate through that. As I said, we will be here tomorrow, compensatory call-in. I think we will try to nab our folks. I think last week we tried to do the Global Sunday Talk on Racism, and I had massive tech interference pretty much for the whole weekend. My Wi-Fi was going in and out. I said it even went through Monday. We didn't have a program on Monday, but it was just a complete Wi-Fi disruption. I wasn't even able to check my email. It was disrupting the compensatory call-in last week, but I'm going to try to do the Global Sunday Talk on Christmas Day, December 25. Some of our international participants said they'd be down for that day, so we'll see if we can broadcast early on December 25 with our international flair. Any other thoughts? Everybody satisfied for workplace racism? Ready to get their eggnog and gift wrapping on? Grant, soon folks are satisfied with the promotion. This would just be in general. Gus's view, anytime that whites offer you a promotion, unless, I mean, it would have to be really unusual circumstances, like the white person that's offering me the promotion, like we've had major, major conflict where, you know, I don't believe anything that this person has to say about anything. Like, we could be outside in the rain, they could say it's raining, and I wouldn't believe them. Like, it would have to be extraordinarily unusual circumstances for me to say, no, you should decline that promotion in a system of white supremacy, because generally all of the things, you know, them sabotaging us and firing us and all of that, they could do that anyway, even if you don't take the promotion. And in fact, they might do that anyway if you decline. I'm like, oh, we're going to do something to this nigga. And they didn't want to take the job, so we'll just fire them. They could do that anyway. That's the system of white supremacy. So I would say, hey, take the promotion. Even if you're there for 6 months, you can put that on your resume. Now you've got experience as a supervisor. Generally speaking, you will probably learn some things. I think it's always constructive for us black people, I'm talking about, to get ourselves into positions where we can learn new things. White people, they do such an extraordinary job keeping us from being able to learn constructive material. If we can get ourselves into more positions where we can learn things, we can learn more than what we know now that will benefit us, we should be trying to do it. That's just my general view. And then just keep it in mind. Absolutely. System of white supremacy. I'm going to be looking for them to mess this up, which I would be doing anyway. So that's just my view. I know that comes up from time to time. People having just thinking, you know, racists are up to something if they are going to give us this promotion or give us this job, whatever the case, which probably is the case, but I would still take it. I think I've said before, if they ever said, Gus T, would you like to be president following Obama's footsteps? Absolutely. Let's do it. I am sure I would learn a whole lot more about the system of white supremacy hanging out in the White House for a little while. Let's do it. With that, we will wrap things up. Much obliged.
Thanks, Gus.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Let us know if you take the promotion. Let us know how it goes, how you update your code. If they are, in fact, sabotaging you, let us know how it goes. But yeah, I would definitely take the job, take the extra coins, ask for training. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Hope it has been a constructive investment of your time and energy this Friday evening. If you have guest suggestions, gripes, comments, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, hopefully we'll get the Black Talk Radio Network archive updated today. Help from Mr. Reed, SoundCloud, the archive from yesterday, and I think it's current up to yesterday. I just need to get today's broadcast uploaded once we conclude, but SoundCloud is current. Google Play is current. Mr. Fox has been uploading away at YouTube. And as I said, hopefully we'll get Black Talk Radio Network updated today. The assault against the cows continues. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism, especially for this weekend. Race soldiers will be out in full effect, I suspect, all over the world looking for the shenanigans to have spilled out and gotten out of control, and let's do some sobriety checkpoints and arrests. I know folks are hanging out with the family, and or a good number of people are doing all of that. I think it would be best to be clear thinking so that we can get through all of the madness as safely as possible. In addition to being sober, if we're out and about visiting relatives or whatever else you got to do, let's be buckled up. Each and every time we're in that vehicle, driver or passenger, let us do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, because I'm sure that'll be a part of the sobriety checkpoints and such as, oh, you're not drinking, but you're not buckled up. That's going to be a $150 ticket. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.